Hey, idiots! I'm Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an idiot sometimes. Aren't we all? If you love to laugh as much as you love to learn about new people, I have a podcast for you called Hey Idiots. It's 50% hilarity, 50% curiosity, and 100% insanity. My guests include experts in their field, sometimes just other stand-up comedian friends, and occasionally absolutely insane people who have somehow convinced me they're knowledgeable about a topic. If you're into expanding your mind or just laughing out loud, check out the Hey Idiots podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
I almost said welcome back like we were some fucking NPR show or something. Sorry. it's Edging the Podcast.
Welcome to Edging the Podcast, a show that we haven't recorded in so many weeks that we've forgotten how to open it.
We've forgotten how to do.
This is Bridget.
This is Ian.
And Brooke's over
that's
there.
That's Brooke.
Yeah, I'm Brooke.
You were talking about some health stuff and how if something felt great.
Yeah,
with your face. After my husband got sinus surgery, they do this thing a week later where you sit in a chair and they pull all the big crusties out of your nose.
Oh, wow.
Like all the dried up blood and stuff. And I was in there with them and they were like, oh, are you okay with this? And I was like, can I record it? And they were like, yeah, sure. And they got this fisheye lens camera that they got up in his nose with a little like clamper thing pulling these big things down. Oh. And all I could think of was that it was very Viva La Bam-esque with the fish the fishbowl lens. I haven't edited it together yet, but I want to do this edit where they pick out this one and you can see his face as it comes out and just go.
I would obviously
with CKY.
I need a copy of that when it's finished.
I was like, watching it the other day. It was so satisfying to watch. I know it hurt him, but
Ian, I do not think agrees with us.
I just bonked my headphones into the microphone. Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
You were like, oh, can I film it? And I was like, I would have been like, can I, like, do one?
Oh,
like,
that would have been so fun. I also love those earwax videos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those have been showing up for me lately. They're pretty great.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I hate it when they fucking string you along, and then they're like, watch part two. I'm like, I don't need to watch this for 2 minutes. I need you to, like, hit me with it.
If I don't see a clean eardrum.
Yeah.
120 seconds, I'm going to lose my shit.
Like, we can't have 8-part ear cleanings.
No. Put a zoom, or not a zoom. Put a zoom on it, but yeah. Put a speed up on it.
Yeah.
Anyways, we also watch Nosferatu. Speaking of
speaking
noses.
Of earwax.
Oh, speaking of noses, great. Nosferatu.
Nosferatu.
Nosferatu. Yeah, so let's rate the movie. Let's give it our best out of five, our own personal opinions.
I think we can talk. It's already been, 2 weeks since we saw it?
Uh-huh.
And
we don't know when this episode will come out.
In, like, three or four months, who knows? Maybe not that long, I don't know. I think we can do spoilers. Can we do spoilers?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course.
You know, I thought it was really weird the way that, the love triangle that happened between the two brothers and, like, that high school girl. I'm thinking of the wrong one. I'm thinking of Vampire Diaries, aren't I?
Yeah.
That's the wrong one.
Yeah.
That was a stupid bit.
I did, though. I found my, so I'll just go ahead and show my hand. If you're worried about spoilers for Nosferatu because you haven't seen it, don't be. It's not worth watching. And I found myself sitting there and just thinking, God, I wish this was Twilight. Like, I am so bored. And I think I was more scared during Twilight.
There were parts of it that I'm like, I see what we're trying to do here.
It was, there were some beautiful shots.
Yes. In the storyline, there were parts of it that I was like, yeah, okay. I feel like, I don't know.
I think I'm the only one that, like, actually liked it, right?
You were the only one. You liked it more than any of the rest of us.
Yeah. I couldn't exactly tell how any of us felt because I think we were all trying, well, except me, to not go too hard. But yeah, I got the sense that you did like it.
I liked it. I mean, it was too long. It was definitely too long. Mm-hmm. And I think the sound in the theater didn't help things because
I don't think it was very good.
It's a very low pitch score. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the actors had very low pitch voices, and that theater just did not have good low pitch sound quality in it.
Yeah.
So it was really hard to understand what anyone was saying.
Yeah.
In big chunks of the movie.
And I think there's a thing now too with mixing. I don't know if it was just the theater, but there's this like mush mouth thing that's really in where they basically like for realism or something, I don't know, make the cinematic score so loud that you can't hear people talking.
Yeah, it's an old theater too. The sound system is old.
It was a beautiful theater that we saw it in.
Oh, yeah. The Kentucky Theater, if you're ever in Lexington.
Yeah,
it's a
visit your
place.
Local theaters.
Movie tickets are still like affordable because they have hundreds of seats. They haven't like made them all recliners, so you can only fit like 40 of them in a theater.
On the flip side of that, because it was very difficult. And also, I'm not great with a lot of the accents. Like, there's a lot of... It sounded British accents, even though they were in Germany.
They were
even
absolutely
though,
British accents. Yeah.
But I was just having a tough time understanding them. And they would have a tough time understanding me. So, like, no hate there. I just wish I had subtitles. But I watched The Substance in that same theater. It was a different room. But the sound design on that movie, being in one of the smaller theater rooms of that theater... it made me want to die in like the best way. I feel like The Substance
was good sound design.
Was the most effective body horror movie I've ever watched.
Yeah.
Cause literally with the sound on the way it was, they had like overly intentional sound design for everything. And it just made your skin stand on edge the whole fucking time.
Ugh.
Like every little thing was... Blech. I watched it again at the house, but it was a lot better. Yeah, like that. Like coughing into a microphone. Cough.
You watched it again?
Yes, I watched it again
on
at
purpose?
Home. On purpose.
Oh my God.
But it was better with the... Because the thing that got me the most was the sound design. Like literally the sound design and The Substance. As I walked out, I was looking around like, is anybody else about to pass out? And everybody else was just like, I didn't get it or whatever. And then I just had to get in my car and as I'm driving on the interstate, just scream for a little bit because I just felt so gross and weird and just like my skin, like there was ants crawling under it. And then I watched it again and it's still a fantastic movie. But if you don't have the intense sound, it's a lot easier to
swallow. You watched The Substance again. I thought you were telling me that you went home and willingly watched Nosferatu again. And so I want to be really clear. I think the acting was incredible. I think that the score was beautiful. I think that some of the shots were great. It was a massive waste of my time. Like, all of the production that went into it was really great, and I was never enthralled, and I did not really know what was happening, and the plot didn't deliver. But a lot of really talented people worked on that movie and did really good work. So, like, it's totally worth seeing for that if you like super... atmospheric horror that has the plot of like an amateur porno, then
I liked the overall like plot line, the creeping dread, the apocalyptic feel of it was great. I loved that.
A great addition.
The whole like plague analogy was great.
Mm-hmm.
The scene of the rats running off of the ship was so good. But the micro plot lines made no sense at all. They didn't connect the bigger pieces together.
Yeah.
So you had like these almost like three separate movies happening at the same time. And the little things that were supposed to tie it all together just didn't feel like they were there for me. But I still loved it. I still just loved the way it made me feel, especially those like just big, like huge in scope shots were great. You guys ready to talk about our book today?
Yes.
Let's do it.
If it's flowers in the attic, I'll be floored.
it's a similar title, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Flowers in the attic. So this book actually came up when I searched for scary books in Audible. I saw the cover and I thought, you know what? Brooke is going to really like this one. I think this is going to be fun. I think I realized from the synopsis that it was like a YA book, but I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized just how much emphasis was on the young in young adult. I think this is like a teen book. So
my interest is piqued.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Brooke and I love young adult books, so this will be great.
I don't dislike them either. So I got into it, and then I realized, oh, this is like R.L. Stein kind of stuff, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I found it. I part of me wanted to like kind of give up on it because like, not that I wasn't enjoying it. I actually was, even though I'm going to kind of make fun of it a little bit. But I don't know. I just didn't know if it'd be a good fit for the show. But I'd already given up on another book that was literally just two sisters fighting for three fucking hours on Audible. No plot, nothing.
Oh, my God.
3 hours into this 16-hour book, there was nothing but these two sisters fighting. And I was like, I'm done. I know I said way back that I'm such a slow reader, such a slow like consumer of books that I've done it twice now and I'll keep doing it. I'm a liar. But
I think that's beautiful.
You guys don't have to be subjected to that one. You do have to be subjected to this one. Anyway, Brooke, I'm going to show you the cover. Do you want to describe the cover of this book for me?
I would love to. Oh yeah. So what actually, well, two things strike me immediately. First of all, and it's not what you'd expect would strike me immediately, it's how much this looks like the cover of Universal Harvester.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. We filmed these out of order, so Universal Harvester is a book that's going to be coming up soon in our series. Be sure to listen for it. Back to the story.
The second thing that strikes me is, yes, the clown, which I do dislike clowns immensely. But the third thing that strikes me is that one of my favorite authors of all time has a quote on the front, Clive Barker.
What is that? What is that quote? It's the most generic blurb I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that would also make me go, now, did he read it?
He absolutely did not read it.
Because what Clive Barker has to say is...
Famed director of Hellraiser, like horror royalty, Clive Barker.
And also children's horror royalty with Aberrat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So okay. Aberrat's sort of horror fantasy, but like artist, author... King Among Men says about this author, an author who knows how to make us afraid.
Honestly,
there's
though,
no way to say less about a book.
If he said anything like that about any of the stuff that we've done, I'd still put it on the cover.
I would die. Yeah. So that is what's the name of the book, Brooke?
This book is...
You don't remember, do you?
I do.
Well, yeah, it's going to be hard to forget, Bridget. It's called Clown in a Cornfield.
And you didn't know this was a young adult fiction.
I didn't know it was. So I knew it was YA. I did know it was YA. I didn't know it was like very young YA. I'm going to read the synopsis and it'll, you know, you'll see why I liked it by the synopsis.
Yeah, and I will say, in Anne's defense, as far as the cover goes, it looks like a Stephen King book.
It looks like it could be any like Stephen King. Yeah, any of that stuff. I don't know how to say his name correctly, so if I say it wrong, I think it's Adam Cesare.
I was looking at Bram Stoker, and I'm like, wait a fucking minute.
Bram Stoker, award winner for superior achievement in a young adult novel. Adam Cesare's terrifying young adult debut, Quinn Maybrook, finds herself caught up in a battle between old and new, tradition and progress, that just might cost her life.
Ooh.
That's right up my alley, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I saw the synopsis and I'm like, all right, I'm in. And then I get into it and I'm like, wow, this is for children. But I still genuinely enjoyed this book, also because of just how much, well, we'll get into it. All right, we'll get into it. Based on our synopsis, our cover, how are we rating this book?
Let me see the cover. Right. I didn't get a good look at.
Brooke, how would you rate Clown in a Cornfield? Are you excited to hear about it?
No, we need to talk about this for a second, though, because this was not brought up. The cornfield is in the shape of a clown's face.
It's like a corn maze cut out of it.
It's a corn maze of...
Yeah, I will say, I am not the most afraid of clowns. Like, if you know 50 people, I'm not going to be the most afraid of clowns in that group. But I'm reasonably afraid of clowns. And that aside, the title is, like, funny enough. And the imagery is funny enough that I would be like, this might be okay. Like, this might be all right with my fears. And it could, like, fun to play with. I think that I would maybe still pick it up based on the cover.
Okay.
I would give the cover, just because it's so funny to me, it's a clown smiling. I'd give the cover 4 out of 6 clowns in a cornfield.
Okay. All right.
I would give the description maybe 3 out of 6 clowns in the cornfield. So for me, it's a 3.5 clowns in the cornfield. Somebody write that down.
All right. Brooke,
I will.
What do you think?
Okay. So
what's your rating out of 6, I guess?
3.5 clowns.
I don't know why I chose 6. I just thought it'd be.
That's okay.
I like it. It's a very clowny number. I think that for the description, I would give it a 3. And for the cover, I would I like the cover. I think I'd give the cover like a 4. So am I also 3.5? I'm 3.5.
You're
clowns.
Also 3.5.
All right.
Ian?
I'm going to give away my ending rating and say that I will never read this book again.
Okay.
I don't want to read it again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a full 6 out of 6 for me. I am so glad I went on this ride. I will never do it again. I'm so glad
it's
that I did
it. It's tough to reread a book.
It is.
Not all books are rereaders.
Yeah.
Some you just need once.
No, they're not. Speaking of clowns, before we get started, let's get to our first ad break.
Yes.
Woo! And we're back. So, are we ready?
We
are ready.
All right, I'm ready. Let's go. Our story is going to start with a bunch of teens partying at a reservoir. These are like high school kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're showing off for each other. They're drinking. They're also videoing. This is going to be a thing that happens a lot. And I think there's a little bit going on with like the author here about just kids constantly on their phones and videoing. We're going to see that several times. But these kids have like this group YouTube channel that they're trying to like make blow up. So they're being especially obnoxious, like playing up for the... It's fucking... Oh, just,
they're trying to be a content house.
It's insufferable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you see all these, they're all popular kids. Like you can tell by the way that they're talking to each other, the way that they're described by the author. And we get like this fake scare early on when this girl named Ginger gets thrown into the water and doesn't come up right away. But eventually she does. You know, it's a false scare. She was fake drowning to like try and scare him, revenge for throwing her in, playing it up for the cameras, whatever. We get introduced to some characters. There's a guy named Cole. He's the group's leader. He's attractive, good looking. All the girls have a crush on him. He's got just that general like leader vibe about him, you know? People kind of follow him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a girl named Ronnie, which I assume is short for Veronica, who's trying to impress him, flirt with him. And then there's Janet, who we understand is like the most popular girl there. And also... who's been like making a play for Cole for a long, long time. Like this is a small town. They've known each other their whole lives.
What era are we in with the recording and stuff?
I think we're in like 2016-ish, 2015-ish.
Okay. These are all 80s ass names.
I know. I think that's part of the author too. Yeah. You get the feel that this like small town dating vibe is going on where everyone is like kind of anxious to make that move and upset like the social circle. But Janet seems to like feel like Cole is hers.
Okay.
Right? Like she has a claim on him. Janet and Ronnie are kind of competing for Cole's attention. This irritates her. It's high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the background of like all this teenage drama, Cole's sister, she's younger, but she's out there with them. She starts, before we get to that, we meet these other kids named like Tucker, Matt, you know, we've met Ginger, Ronnie, mm-hmm. and Janet. I think that's everybody. And then that we're going to talk about later on. Cole's sister is walking across the dam that's holding back the reservoir, right? The lip mm-hmm. of it, like the peak of it,
that's
where there's water
good.
On one side of her, and then there's a large mm-hmm. drop on the other side. I get the impression by the way that they describe it that this is like a wide lip. This isn't like a treacherous walk.
Mm.
But everyone out here has been drinking.
Yeah.
Nobody's in a good place to be walking across a dam. It's probably like the width of this desk, right? Like it's a walkway you could easily navigate, but you probably shouldn't anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. And not when you've been drinking.
Not when you've been drinking. Like a good gust of wind could knock you off of it by, you know, just mm-hmm. catching you off balance. So Cole's sister is walking across this thing. Janet notices while she's filming that this is happening in the background, and she kind of like the camera kind of drifts while she's watching her with her mm-hmm. with her eyes instead of the camera. But then she makes it across. No big deal. This is a second fake scare, mm-hmm. right? Janet goes back to filming the boys being stupid. And, you know, that attention mostly goes back to Cole. A few minutes later, she notices that Cole's sister is now climbing up this concrete stack. I'm not exactly sure, like, what a concrete stack is. In my brain, I'm picturing, like, a stack of those barrier walls that you see on the side of the interstate when there's construction. I don't think that's actually what it is, but that's just what I'm picturing. So that's what it's going to be because I don't know any better. This, like, isn't unusual. Kids mm-hmm. climb this thing and use it as, like, a diving spot, like, into the reservoir, like, a spot to jump in the water, you know?
I'm stressed. I'm too old for this.
I know, right? So she gets up there, they point the camera at her, and she jumps. On the way down, just as her head passes the edge of the stack, there's like a little shift. And Janet may have been the only one to notice the moment that that dive turned into a fall. She hits the water, and there's a moment when everyone waits for her to come back up, just like they waited for Ginger to come up a few minutes before. But it didn't take nearly as long as it did for Ginger because Ginger was faking.
Mm.
Cole's sister isn't. She came up almost right away, face down, arms out. Janet drops the phone, and for the next 2 hours, until the phone died, it filmed nothing but the blue sky.
Mm.
So that's how our story begins, right? We're going to pick up about a year later. It's very I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't, which I love, by the way.
Yeah.
That's perfect. We have a new character. Her name is Quinn. Quinn is moving to town from Philadelphia. The town is called Kettle Springs, Missouri. Quinn's dad is a doctor, and the old doctor in Kettle Springs has retired. It's the kind of town that like only has one doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, Quinn's dad, or rather Quinn's mom has just died, and her dad decided that they needed a new start. So they left the city. They moved to rural Missouri. Kettle Springs is the town where that reservoir was in the opening.
Mm-hmm.
It's tiny, a little main street, and lots of cornfields.
Can I just interject here really quick?
You can, yes.
As someone whose mom did die when they were in high school, probably the worst thing you could... It's like, hey... We need a fresh start. I know you have all of these friends and you have all of this stability here, but I'm going to take us to Missouri.
But there's a town in Missouri that needs a doctor and no one else, literally no one else can do it.
Yeah, that was just, that's just what was going through my head. Like if my dad would have been like, hey, we're going to move to a different state.
I'm a doctor now.
Yeah.
We're going to Missouri.
I would have had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
They get to their new house. They move in. Quinn's room is in the attic. It's a finished attic with a big wide open space. It sounds like really cool. I mm-hmm. think I would have loved that. Quinn hates it.
Okay.
She hates it because the floors are creaky and she knows that there won't be like any way to sneak around the house or maybe sneak out if she makes friends there. Her dad's just going to be like aware of everything she's doing all the time, right? So she kind of feels, I don't know, a little weird about it. We talk about this for quite a long time in the book for something that's never going to come back up again.
Okay.
So it felt like mentioning because it did take up a substantial part of this chapter.
But maybe the author had a room that he didn't like.
Yeah, no. So this never comes back up.
Okay.
I don't think we're even in her room ever again. So when you write a story, sometimes you think you're going to a certain place and then you don't, and you forget to take out all traces that you were ever going there. That might be what happened here. He could have just been like, maybe Adam Cesar just really likes rooms.
Yeah.
And just like, that was fun for him. That's cool. I get it. There's like no banister on the way up the stairs. You know, the stairs creak louder than anything else in the house. And she's got a big window, and outside that window is a giant cornfield. Her house is the edge of town. There's a street with houses on it, but she looks back out into nothing from her room.
All right. Listen, not to interject as you're telling us about this book. You're telling me that this guy came here to be this small town's only doctor.
Yeah.
And he moved to the edge of town?
He sure did. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the edge of town seems to be just about as far away from anything else in town as anything else is.
All right.
It's a very small place. But a place large enough to have a full-size high school.
Yeah.
You could get, you know, like maybe if for your money, you might get a better house on the outside. I mean, we don't know about dads. We don't know a lot about dads thinking right now.
I have a feeling that a doctor in Philadelphia is going to be able to afford just about anything in Kettle Springs, Missouri.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. Out there in these cornfields, off in the distance, there's a burned-out factory. And on the side of that factory, wait for it, is a painting of a clown.
Dislike.
It's a clown in a cornfield.
Yeah.
It's a clown in a cornfield. So the next morning, Quinn gets up and she walks to school. This is a walk into school kind of town. She leaves at the same time as her neighbor, a boy named Rust, which I think is short for Rusty, which I actually thought was short for something else all along. I don't know. His name is Rust. Right. So Rust has introduced himself. Rust, Rusty, Russell, we don't know. Well, it's Rust. We know it's Rust for sure. Because that is what he calls himself.
The author's listening like, no, wait a fucking second.
It's like, no, we know his name, goddammit. He introduces himself. They walk to school together. Rust seems to be like pretty introverted. Quinn asks him about the factory. He says it's an old corn syrup factory that caught fire recently and it's abandoned now. He's nice enough, but at school she like separates from him and finds her locker. There's a student that passes by and notices that she's having trouble getting her locker open. It's a girl in cargo shorts. She's got dark hair. There's like light roots, a nose piercing. There's like hints of gossip like coming from around her. And then a boy walks by. I don't know what that means exactly. I wrote that and it made sense. It's been about a month since I wrote that down. I don't know what that means anymore. So there were hints of gossip. And then this boy walks by. It's Cole.
Oh.
Right? From our opening scene, the popular boy, the one whose sister drowned. The girl with the nose ring notices Quinn noticing him, and she says, yeah, he's pretty cute. And then she says, for an arsonist.
That's so high school.
The girl with the nose ring introduces herself. It's Ginger. Ginger seems to have fallen out with our group, right? It is very, I Know What You Did Last Summer. It's Jennifer Love Hewitt coming back in the second movie, kind of goth.
Oh, yeah.
Or later on in the first movie, I guess.
I have not watched any of those, but I need to.
Really?
I haven't seen it, but I can picture Jennifer Love Hewitt at that age.
It's not as good as Scream, but in some ways it's better than Scream.
I get that. Okay.
Same era. Scream was like much smarter. It's a better movie. It's a funner movie. So she says that her name's Ginger. She says her hair used to be lighter. This is Ginger from the opening scene. You know, she fell into the water, or she was thrown into the water, pretended to drown, all that. As you can probably guess, Quinn is about to meet all those characters from earlier. Janet, the popular hot girl, is in one of her classes. So is Ronnie. So is Cole. And in one of her classes, they're all in there together. And Quinn gets seated next to them. in that same class, there's a disruption between like the popular kids. They like get into a little thing with this snarky back and forth between them. The teacher like yells at them. They start into it with the teacher. Mm. And there's like a really long kind of like kids these days rant that the teacher has at kids these days.
Like to their faces?
Yeah, kind of at them. And it's focused on all of them, but specifically and like most pointedly at Cole. Even though she wasn't involved, she was just kind of there by proximity. Quinn gets like lumped into them and the teacher sends them all to detention. While they're in detention together, we learn that Cole accidentally set the factory on fire, explaining that comment from Ginger, right?
Mm.
We kind of all knew that was happening, mm-hmm. right? The friendship between them is a lot more frayed than it felt in that opening scene.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's just a little tense. It's not like icy, but it's tense, right? There's a lot of like angsty dialogue between all of them. And through it all, Quinn kind of like gets initiated into the group. It makes more sense than mm-hmm. I'm doing justice to it right now. They talk about their YouTube channel and that they like, you know, the one they manage together where they do their little like pranks and live stream their parties. There's vague talk about something called Founders Day, and the kids talk about a party that they have planned out in the cornfields the night of Founders Day. Mm. Right. So we're getting somewhere. Our plot's moving.
Yeah.
You think there's going to be a clown out there?
I'm upset about it.
I
don't like it. This feels like, I don't know if the author wrote this after all of those like fake clown sightings.
I feel like this happened because that was like right with the 2016 election, right?
It was around then.
Yeah. So I don't know when he wrote this, but it was released about that same time. Mm-hmm. So if he wasn't writing it while it was going on,
then he's the one who did it.
He was the one doing it.
He was the clown all along.
Found you. Got him. All right, now, our listeners are about to learn something that I think is the creepiest part of this whole thing. Our listeners are about to learn how their data and online activity has trained our host site and their podcast app to deliver to them the targeted advertisements that they're about to endure. I'm excited for this little journey. We're all going to go on it together. It's like one of those like old choose-your-own-adventure books, except it's not an adventure and you're not actually choosing. It's what all of human, cultural, and societal evolution has culminated in, and I think we should all be so proud of that. So let's not delay it any further. Here we go. And we're back. Oh, wasn't that fun? That was what our ancestors hunted tigers and survived brutal winters for. Gah, man, I love it. I love that we've gotten this far.
Do you think our specific ancestors hunted tigers?
I don't know. I mean, far enough back, sure.
Sure.
So they did it so that we could experience the boundless joy of targeted advertising.
Yeah.
All right. So we're back in Kettle Springs, Missouri. It's after school. I'm not sure if it's actually the same day or another day, like shortly after, mm-hmm. like that week, right? But Quinn and her dad go to a diner. And I'm not, by the way, it's not the author's fault that I don't know that. It's just been a long time since I've read the book or listened to the book. So they go to this diner. They have this waitress. She's an older lady. She's nice. Quinn is like explaining why she got detention. And while they're there, Janet and Cole, who I keep thinking are like in their 50s, but in our story are 17 or 18 year old high school students. Janet and Cole and all the other popular kids like drop into the diner too. They don't really interact with Quinn. The sheriff of Kettle Springs also walks in. This is the first time we're meeting the sheriff, right? The sheriff comes in and he seems to just really have it out for the popular kids. He doesn't like them at all. Maybe this is because one of them burned down a factory.
Yeah.
I could see that. I could see a law enforcement officer being a little, you know, having some misgivings.
I always think it's weird when adults have vendettas against kids, though.
I also really agree with that. You're going to love the rest of this book.
Okay.
so they... there's this back and forth between like the popular kids and the sheriff, in which the popular kids like win, which never happens, right?
Yeah.
There's like, I don't know, there's just a lot of like kids these days from the grown-ups in this town, right? So it's like what you're talking about, adults having vendettas with kids.
Very Scooby-Doo.
Much less snacks, much fewer snacks. After this like weird little fight that he picks with literal children, the sheriff like comes over and introduces himself to Quinn's dad. Quinn's dad, of course, is the new doctor in town. The sheriff also has this like weird exchange with Quinn's dad, whose name is Glenn, and that confused me. So I'm not going to say he's just going to be Quinn's dad because Glenn and Quinn sound too close alike. And this is an audio medium. You're not reading it. So the sheriff has this like weird exchange that's supposed to feel like kind of coercive a little bit, I think. And since it's like a YA book, a very young YA book, I think it could pass as intimidating to like a teenager who's reading it. As an adult reading it, I was just like, this is so fucking stupid. But I'm not the targeted demo. I'm not holding that against the author. You write to your audience. I think a teen would probably feel like this was believable. So, which like side note, I have like a pet peeve about people who like hold books like this up against like James Joyce novels or whatever. Like it's supposed to be a fun little ride. It's not like supposed to change your life. Grow the fuck up.
Let
you know?
People have fun.
Let people have fun. Brooke, romance novels are kind of your thing. And I feel like, that genre gets that kind of treatment too, where people are like, oh, you know, I remember this. This is going to feel so dated and it's going to be so niche. But I remember there was an NPR show where the Decembrists, this band, this indie rock band from like the 2000s was on. And they were known for having these very complicated like lyrics with lots of references to like classical literature and mythology. And they compared Decembrist songs to Justin Bieber's Baby.
Now,
and
that's like funny to do, but not if you're being serious.
They were being sort of serious and also, I think, trying to be funny. And they were asking the lead singer from the Decembrists to comment on that, to which he was like, you know what? There are different things for different people. You know, the people that really like Justin Bieber and enjoy that music probably aren't going to be our audience. And our audience probably isn't going to like Justin Bieber's music. But I'm glad that everyone's got something for him that they're having a lot of fun with.
I am glad that the Decembrists took that
stance. You know, and that's how I feel about this, right? You know, if you really like Tolstoy novels and whatever, read them all, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you like romance books, read them.
But also,
you know, they're not supposed to be the same thing.
And do you... like, it's kind of on you if you only like to read one kind of book.
Right.
Like, do you always want a book that's going to wreck you up, or do you sometimes just want to have a beach read?
When I was younger, I used to walk down to the library when I first moved to Lexington, and on the first floor there, they had like the new books out, and I always found myself wanting to read like what at the time they were calling chick lit, you know?
Yeah.
Because they had cool covers and like, it was like young single people having a conflict, and that was me. And I was supposed to be this broody indie kid.
Yeah.
But God, I couldn't get enough of them. I loved them. I would hide them in my little bag.
That's
I didn't
so
want people
great.
To see me, but I would go home and I would read the shit out of those things.
Hell yes. Everyone should just read what they want to read.
Exactly.
Reminder, what is a chicklet? Like the, in what you were referencing? A chicklet
like
romance?
Just like, not exactly, sort of romance.
It's like
a rom-com in a book.
Okay.
There was this split, which maybe you're not aware of, Ian. And so, like, I feel like that's really romance now.
Is it?
And it doesn't always contain sex. Harlequin romance used to be a bigger deal.
Right.
And, like, that sort of vibe, the bodice rippers.
This is like, you know, I just moved to New York, and my job is this, and I found, you know, I met this person.
That's pretty much romance right now.
Yeah.
And then also, usually there's sex. And it's great.
But, like, there wasn't always, though.
No, not always.
Sometimes it was, like, just a relationship kind of blooming. It was, like, implied that it happened, but it wasn't, like, graphic scenes or anything.
Yeah, there's a total slider for smut in books like that. Sometimes it's implied. I mean, usually it's implied because we're talking about adults. So, like, there's probably sex. But I wouldn't even say most of the books are smutty. It's just kind of bleeds across those lines.
I don't think any of them that I grabbed like off of those shelves were at all. They were just fun. Anyway, that was a long aside. You know, read what you want to read. Enjoy what you want to enjoy. Don't be a dick and judge it. Anyway, back to our current book. We're still in this diner, right? So we're in this diner. We've got a nice older waitress. We've got a sheriff who's just like real weird. Some popular kids that are just being popular kids, and Quinn and her dad. The sheriff says that the town is going to have like some changes and invites Quinn's dad to a meeting that night. Now, something happens here that I'm not going to mention because it never comes up again. And I thought it was so stupid. I'm going to tell you off mic later on. Remind me to tell you.
Oh.
But I thought we were going a certain direction, and we just it was another thing that just never came back up. So remind me to tell you off mic. I don't want to bring it up here because it's a whole thing. Anyway, the sheriff says they're going to have this like town meeting about some changes that are going to happen. And he leaves Quinn's dad with a flyer for the meeting. The flyer is the thing that I want you to remember later on. That's a whole thing our listeners just got to experience that they'll never hear.
Yeah.
We're doing the same shit.
Oh, yeah, we absolutely are.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, this is so meta. Hell yeah.
Look at that.
All right.
I was thinking, too, like, maybe you should tell us in the patron-only portion.
I still don't want to do that.
No.
No, I still
no it's only for us.
Yeah, it's only
You'll
for
have
y'all.
To call us personally
yeah,
to get,
if you get
one.
Our
yeah.
No, let's not go. No, let's not do that. anyway, the sheriff, like, we get the impression he's got this, like, pretty big political influence in town. We're at this like meeting that he talked about, right? And I don't think Quinn's dad came to the meeting, but we like shift perspective and we're in the meeting, right? This town meeting is going on. He's kind of like a pretty big political force in the town. It's an angry meeting. There's lots of like acrimony. There's people like talking over each other. It's what a kid would think a town meeting is, right?
Sure.
There's a speaker up there talking about how the town has gone downhill ever since that factory burned down. The sheriff steps in and, you know, we don't like him. He's got these authoritarian vibes to him, but he seems to have this way of making alliances and like getting on the right side of people who don't expect him to be on the same side as him. Right. And like building some rapport, some trust that way. I almost forgot the word rapport in the middle of saying it, if it sounded funny. So he's like kind of navigating this thing pretty deftly, right? And it is actually pretty good writing. But then the sheriff just kind of like explains that he seems to have this feeling that if Founders Day, this little festival that small towns have, every town has this festival, right? Here in this town, it's the Pioneer Festival, right? Other towns have versions of this. He seems to think that if Founders Day, this festival the popular kids mentioned, like they were going to have their party afterwards, if Founders Day goes really well, maybe, just maybe, the owner of that corn syrup factory will just come back into town and reopen it. Famously, that's the way that people decide where to open their factories. You know, again, this is for teenagers, whatever. But the sheriff has this plan for getting the town back on track, and it's putting on a damn good festival.
God, I want this to be how things work.
He wants everyone at this meeting who isn't totally committed to this goal to leave. Which, of course, is exactly how town meetings also work. The sheriff just walks in and calls it off. It's how city councils work. The people who stay need to be totally committed to this goal of making a damn fine Founders Day. It's going to be a secret for some reason.
Uh-huh.
And the people who stay, they have their secret meeting. Oh, it's amazing.
This is very 80s feeling.
It is, right? I told you it's a fun ride, right?
Yeah.
It's a fun ride. So next, we jump to Founders Day. The kids are there. It's just like normal small town kind of festivities. Something else that we learned from that meeting is that the owner of that corn syrup factory with the big clown factory, the one that caught fire, is Cole's dad, right? And Cole's dad just like up and left town afterwards, leaving Cole there. Also, his daughter died, Cole's sister, right? So a lot's going on with the guy. His factory burns down, his daughter is dead, but he just like up and leaves Cole, and Cole's just been like fucking living by himself. And I'm not sure if he's like a a legal adult or not.
Yeah.
Probably not for if he's still in high school. And this happened over a year ago.
Yeah, but so, I mean, if your parent just leaves and you can pay all the bills and stuff, it doesn't really matter.
I guess so, yeah.
That's probably one of the more realistic things about this book. Yeah, so far, somebody would abandon their child and their kid would be like, well, I didn't have to.
So they also think that he might, like, show up to see how the festival's going, right?
And judge if he's going to come back to his abandoned child on how lit this festival is.
Listen, ACAB, not to be a sheriff stan, but it makes a little bit more sense, his harebrained scheme, knowing that the owner of the factory has familial ties to the town.
Sure.
Like, his son is still there.
Sure, we all know that people invest millions of dollars into refurbing old corn syrup factories because festivals went pretty good.
Sure.
Right? We get it. We get it. We all love a festival. Any successful business person knows you have to put your factory somewhere where the festivals are fucking top tier.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't want to be fucking bored, but also so the sheriff knows this kid has been abandoned.
Yeah.
But he also knows that your business can't succeed in a bad festival town.
Yeah.
It just can't do it. You can't put them there.
We couldn't possibly make a presentation appealing to, like, the large number of workers still available or, like, why it would be a good commodity.
Yeah.
Why haven't they arrested this man? He's abandoned a kid.
So we run into the popular kids again at Founders Day. Quinn falls in with them, separates from her dad. Her dad's just kind of being there, enjoying the festival. You're realizing, you know, you got to give your daughter some space.
Sure.
You know. So something goes wrong and one of the floats in the parade catches fire somehow.
Okay.
It's not the fault of the popular kids, but they just happened to be nearby. One of them having burned down a factory, previously, and the sheriff is not having good feelings about it. The sheriff finds him. He loses his ever loving shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's convinced that Cole caught his family's factory on fire on purpose. Maybe not. Who knows, but this float is definitely his fault, right?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. We're not entirely sure. Later that night, there's another unplanned town meeting.
And everyone's just there. They just show up like group
the
impulse.
The festival didn't go well. This is a disaster for the economic future of this town. They have this unplanned town meeting. With all the people that stayed behind at the first meeting, right? So the first meeting, the people who stayed behind.
The secret town meeting.
Exactly. This time, the sheriff deputizes all of them, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hang on. And anyone who doesn't want to be deputized should leave the room so they can talk alone. So we've had a double two opportunities to exit this plan. What plan could still be going on? The festival caught on fire, right?
Where is the mayor?
I don't know. I think the sheriff might be the mayor. So a lot of people are deputized. They're talking by themselves in a room. That's not good. We don't like that. Something else that we don't like are all these targeted ads that you're about to hear right now. We're back. So we need to talk about Frindo. Frindo is the name of the clown on the side of that factory. It's like the mascot of the town, practically.
Got I thought you were saying Brindo.
Frindo, like your friend with an O on the back of it.
That makes more sense.
An incredible. So a thing about me is that I'm afraid of clowns in a similar way that I'm afraid of mascots. So the fact that this clown is a clown and a mascot is horrible. And Frindo is a very good name for a scary mascot.
It's a good
clown.
Name. One of the fun things about this is that I've talked about it before. I'm a really, really slow reader. I didn't learn to read until I was like later in elementary school.
31.
And I've always, until I was 31, 10 years ago. Still very slow reader. So I listen to all of my books. And when I prepare for these episodes, I'm listening to them. I'm either driving or I'm at the gym or something. And when I stop, I'll like grab my phone and make a voice note into a very long note in the notes app.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like copy it all over into a document and edit it all together. every single time I said friendo, it spelled it a different way. And like some of them were like Brando. Some of them were like Brendan. Friendo without the I was pretty common. Don't know what that is.
Okay.
So anyway, we need to talk about friendo. Friendo, clown on the side of the factory. There are like signs in like the shop windows on their little like main street that have like the friendo face on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like an official mascot, but everyone has kind of adopted it, right?
Okay.
I haven't mentioned friendo yet for sheer convenience of not having to say it a ton of times into my notes app, but mm-hmm. we got to talk about him now. A lot of people at Founders Day were wearing friendo masks, right? And those signs are all around town. He's a very familiar face. These people would recognize it, you know, anywhere, but outsiders maybe wouldn't, right? So it's not one of those universal things. It's a high school mascot.
Poor
right?
Quinn.
I know. I'm like, I know you're leading up to something right now, but let's go back to the fact that this girl's mother just died and her father moves her to the clown town.
Sure does.
Like, can you imagine something worse? What a horrible, horrible nightmare that is.
You know what? I just got to shout out my dad real quick because he did it right.
God damn.
So it's still the night of Founders Day. And Tucker, remember Tucker mm-hmm. from early on? He's one of those kids that was at the reservoir. He's one of the popular kids. Tucker is home and he's been kind of a side character in this group of popular kids. He's just kind of there mm-hmm. a lot. Tucker's home alone after the parade. He's bored. Something draws his attention to his phone. It's a notification from a Ring cam at the front door. He opens up his phone to take a look. I don't know why he's getting these, mm-hmm. but
these children don't have parents.
They don't. Yeah. So he opens it up to take a look, and Friendo the clown is just standing at the front door. He hasn't knocked or rang the doorbell. He's just standing there.
Did he see that it was a clown when he got the notification?
I don't know how Ring cams work. He got a notification and opened it up so that he was looking at the camera, and there's just a clown standing there.
Oh, so he didn't open the door.
Correct. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, he opened up his phone.
I was so scared. Okay, cool.
Opened his phone and just sees this clown standing on his porch. Now, being that Friendo is like so common in mm-hmm. this town, this isn't immediately alarming to Tucker, right? Tucker thinks that it's one of his friends trying to prank him. So Tucker decides he's going to go out the back door, sneak around the house and try and scare him first, right? Scare the clown first. Because he assumes they've got this like YouTube channel thing they do.
Yeah.
He assumes there's a camera somewhere filming this and he can like not be the butt of this joke, mm-hmm. but turn the tables and whatever, right? So he goes all the way around the front of the house and there's no one there. He comes back inside through the front door and Friendo the clown is waiting for him in the middle of the living room. There's muddy footprints on the carpet from like where he came in the back door where Tucker had gone out. So I'm guessing they kind of like did this thing where they went around the house on opposite sides, right? Friendo is holding something behind his back. We assume it's a knife. Guess what it is?
Rubber chicken.
It's a knife.
Dang.
That was a good guess, Brooke.
Yeah, thanks.
That was a great guess. Tucker still thinks he's being pranked like mm-hmm. an idiot, and he swats at that knife and it cuts him.
Okay.
He just like, smacks at a knife.
This kid is stone cold. He's like, there's no way this is real.
Honestly, if I were a kid experiencing a lot of YouTube-esque pranks,
uh-huh.
yeah.
I probably would feel the same way.
So he swats at the knife, it cuts his hand. And then Friendo stuck him in the stomach with it.
Oh.
So he just sticks the knife in his stomach. By the way, Friendo in my notes here is spelled F-E-R-E-N. Oh, sorry. F-R-E-N-O. Friendo. Friendo. There's a fight somehow with a knife in his gut. And Tucker gets his throat cut with, I guess, the same knife. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Weapons... We're going to struggle with weapons in this story, okay?
Okay.
especially in the Patreon section. So our next scene is the rest of the kids. They're all stuffed into a car, right? You know, like when you're in high school and you just pile people in a car.
Like clowns.
Like clowns. Oh my God. It's getting so deep. They're driving down these country roads. There's cornfields on both sides. You know, in the back seat, it's like two people deep in each seat. You know, people are on each other's laps and all that. It's nighttime. They're all crammed in. Cole is driving. And someone is trying to text Tucker, but he's not answering. RIP. All of a sudden, Frindo is in the middle of the road in front of them. They come like screeching to a stop, but not before they just like slam through him.
Wait, so they hit him?
They hit him. There's a moment of panic. They all get out of the car, but it's another fake scare. This Frindo is a scarecrow. It's been set up there.
Oh.
Janet's been in the back seat texting their friends that are already at the party, letting them know when they're close. So they snuck this thing out there just before they took a turn and tried to see it. And of course, it's all being recorded for their YouTube channel, right? So they all like pull into the parking area. They get out of the car. This party is the way that high school parties are on TV, not the way high school parties are in real life.
Yeah.
Right? We all know the difference. We all experienced that.
They're either boring or someone's dead.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So. They are horrific or they are just, you're just sitting there waiting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We see Rust. Rust is back. The neighbor that walked Quinn to school on that first day, him and Cole bump into each other and there's like some bad blood between them, right?
Oh.
There's some history here. We're not exactly sure what happened or why, but we get the impression that they used to be friends.
Hmm.
Now they're not. So we're going to have a perspective shift here. We're going to move to Quinn's dad's perspective. He's home alone. His daughter's out at a party with her friends.
It's the most boring perspective.
I know, right? He sees something out in the cornfield behind the house. He goes out to investigate. Suddenly, he is overcome by somebody who gets him in a headlock and then knocks him unconscious. He wakes up, and he's in this pile of, like, rotting and petrifying corn.
Ooh.
There's rats and mice in it, and there's something else down in there. There is a dead body hidden underneath this pile of corn.
That's pretty good. That's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
He kind of like kicks some corn aside to reveal his face. It's the old doctor who retired and that he came here to replace.
I never would have guessed that.
So early in the book, he meets that doctor, right? I kind of didn't cover it back then because I didn't think it was important. And obviously, I didn't think to go back and add that little Easter egg in. But
yeah.
Early in the story, Quinn's dad meets the old doctor. So that's how he recognizes him. There's somebody else in the room with him and like he knocks him out again, but before he does, he asks him where his daughter is. And then when he refuses to answer, he like knocks him out again, I guess. Lots of getting knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to go back to the party now. Quinn is getting pretty tipsy. She wanders around to like a secluded edge of this clearing in the cornfield where they all are, right? She's trying to sober up a little bit. Ginger is there. We met her again at the lockers. She was also at the lake. She's like not one of the cool kids anymore. Ginger starts to approach Quinn and ask if she's okay, but then suddenly she stops. And she like, I don't know, looks stunned. She has this look like she's trying to catch her breath. Quinn approaches her. She's worried. And then she finds an arrow dug into Quinn or into Ginger's back. She's been shot with an arrow from behind. Ginger falls. Behind her in the distance, there's a clown with a crossbow.
God damn.
So Frindo has come to the party. All right,
oh,
we
this
are
is
about
such a good story.
I know. It's gonna get so much better. And it's going to do that, unfortunately, in the Patreon section of this episode. So if you're listening to us on the main feed, by now you know the drill. We're going to put the rest of the story behind our Patreon account. Wherever you're listening right now, you can find us at patreon.com/edgingthepodcast. If you're listening to us on the Patreon feed, you are in for a treat. If you're not, Go there, join up now, and you can hear the rest of this. You'll get our reactions on the other side of the sensor tone. Just so you know, the rest of the story is going to take us another 10 or 15 minutes. The sensor tone will be very short. You're not just missing a few words here.
You'll be missing a lot of fun reactions from us, though,
because I
feel like this is going to be a wild-ass ride.
We're halfway through the book. The rest of the book happens at this party.
Yeah. So, my prediction is that this guy's actually just Ryan Murphy's pen name based on how this is unfolding.
So are you guys ready?
Let's go.
You ready for the rest of Clown in the Cornfield?
Oh, my God.
Let's go.
You know, we're all from Kentucky. The timeline is hard to figure out, but it made sense as I read it. It's been a while.
Especially drunk teenagers in Missouri.
But Quinn, all right. So,
holy shit!
I told you it was a ride, didn't I?
I love it.
I mean, the chaos, the melodrama, the twists and turns. I want this movie.
You want the movie?
Yeah. Maybe it needs to be a TV series.
Yeah.
At least one.
What stuffy author did you bring up earlier?
Was it James Joyce?
James Joyce, yeah.
Okay, this versus James Joyce, I'd love to see the NPR on that because honestly, this all the way.
You can see why this is a 6 out of 6, but also I would never want to do it again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally can.
All right. So the book ends with this scene a few months later, right?
Epilogue.
Epilogue. The town, having lost a substantial portion of its population, adults and teenagers alike, seems to kind of just be like recovering. It's just cool.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are all hanging out. A couple of those characters are back together. We're not going to say who they are.
Yeah.
They're back together. Things are going well for them. The book ends with them in this diner scene, right? And it's just all good. So, except that maybe it's not all good, right?
No.
Because there are sequels. There are sequels to this book.
How are we setting it up?
So, apparently there's more to say. We have Clown in the Cornfield 2, Friendo Lives.
Oh.
And we have Clown in a Cornfield 3, Church of Friendo.
Ooh.
And you guys asked for a movie? There's a movie coming up in May of 2025.
Oh, yes!
So a lot of people like this. There's a lot of people thought there was a market for this.
I'm the market.
I think we should go see the movie in May
100%.
Of 2025. Probably when this episode's coming out. Maybe a month or two out. We'll keep you updated.
Mm-hmm.
Brooke Bridget, how do you rate this book on the other side?
7 out of 6.
Yeah, 7 out of 6.
Yeah.
That was so fun.
Right?
That was so fun.
Right? Yeah. 7 out of 6, 7 out of 6, 6 out of 6. That's our best rating ever.
Probably.
We've done some heavy shit here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our best.
This is what we needed.
This is our best rating.
This is what we needed. Oh my God.
Well done, Adam Cesare. I know this is what you started your writing career for.
Yeah.
This is probably the culmination of your success. It doesn't get any better from here.
No, this was it. This was the peak.
This was it. You did it. You got that 7 out of 6.
7 out of 6 clowns in a cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
Sure are. Wow, I'm never doing that again. I am definitely not reading those sequels. Unless the audience just demands it because we have no principles.
Yeah.
We might have to read those sequels.
Okay, I'll tell you what.
I will hurt myself for the audience.
We each read one.
Yeah, and I also think that join our Patreon and tell us you want us to do it. You know what?
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens.
Follow us on social media.
There's some spoilers in here that the sequels I can see fleshing out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
We have to space it out a little bit, but man, that could be fun.
Yeah.
I think this is maybe one of our more fun episodes.
Yeah.
Gosh, they get heavy.
Uh-huh.
They get, yeah, this was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I didn't give up on this book when I realized it was for teenagers.
I am so glad you kept reading. I feel changed.
Right?
This is so great.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been Edging the Podcast. That's not what it's called. This has been Edging.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's our website, Edging the Podcast.
You get it.
Yeah. I'm Ian.
I'm Bridget.
And I'm Brooke.
And stay out of the cornfield.
Yeah.
Mwah.